Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So on page 37-38, the summary of the verses 22 to 31, second paragraph. Those yogis who wish to experience improved material enjoyment, such as transference to Brahmaloka, the eightfold mystic cities, free travel in outer space, or a situation of his own choosing in one of the millions of planets, must take with them their subtle body when they leave the gross body behind. The pure devotees, on the other hand, are concerned only with the spiritual body. They have unrestricted movements throughout all of existence, including the spiritual world. Fruit of workers, gross materialists can never move unrestrictedly. The yogi who retains the subtle body gradually becomes purified and reaches the highest planet, Brahma Loka, by mystic ascension through the Shishumara, etc. At the time of that final devastation, he may transfer from Brahma Loka to Vaikuntha. In Brahma Loka, the only existing pain is compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service and who are suffering miseries in the material world. The yogi may continue his purification and so move upward to the spiritual world. He can do so by merging his ego in the Mahat-tattva. In this way, he comes to the point of pure self-realization, thus attaining perfection, association with the personality of Godhead, and complete bliss and satisfaction. This is his constitutional state. Those who attain such devotional perfection are never again attracted by this material world, nor do they ever return. So it's maintaining a material desire that one is engaged in the yogic process, because there's something you want to gain, some mystic perfection. So that will put one, if one is determined, it will give one to bring one to Brahma Loka. And there, in the association of Lord Brahma, one could take up more the devotional angle. Then that can then transfer one to the spiritual world. So here is important to note this element. Here is the Mahat-tattva. That's where they merge the ego, because that's where it comes in. The Mahat-tattva means that the souls have been put into the universe with ego, right? The element of ego is there. That's what creates the material. That's what starts. That's the catalyst for the material creation. Does that make sense? So, in other words, if you want the material world to manifest, the catalyst for doing it is the false ego. You have pradhan, you add false ego, then it becomes mahat-tattva, because it becomes basically not empowered, enlivened, imbued with the living entities and their desire to lord it over material energy, right? The false ego here means I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, right? So that means I think I'm God, because God is the controller and the enjoyer. We're the controlled, we're the enjoyed. So then, that false ego then makes the Mahat-tattva, right? Then from the Mahat-tattva, that ego, again, by contact, then creates the gross false ego. Then again will create the intelligence, again added the mind, again added the ether, again added the air, the fire, like this. So we see is that the more the ego is added, the more gross the material manifestation becomes. So if the material ego is merged into the Mahat-tattva, in other words, it's left in the material existence, then one is out of material existence. Does that make sense? So those who go into the body of the Lord, the problem is they don't actually leave material existence. They may be living in the body of the Lord, but so is material energy. Right? Material energy is also within the Lord. And the living entities are in that, though they're in God.
So you may say, well, they're in God. They've merged into Mahavishnu. Why isn't it spiritual? Because their consciousness is still Mahatattva. They never left that purified, mundane element of Vasudeva Sattva. They didn't come to the actual Vasudeva Sattva, which means that you're a devotee of Vasudeva. Yes.
Just turning Mars' telescope around.
Looking at the other us.
Prabhupada directly stated in the lecture that wherever the Lord is, His Prakriti is with Him. That means also in the heart of the living enemy. So, when we were discussing in this chapter, this is called The Lord in the Heart, we should understand also Maya Devi, His Prakriti is right next to Him. And nothing can be hidden from the Lord. Prabhupada used to elaborate on this theme in so many ways in his lectures and certainly in his purports and other media letters and so on. So Krishna knows us much better than we know ourselves. I mean, infinitely. He knows every iota of detail about every life we've ever had in the whole beginningless material existence in this universe and perhaps other universes previous that were breathed out of Mahavishnu. We've totally forgotten that, but He knows everything. He knows what desires, they're called vasanas, unconscious desires. It means that we're not even aware of them, but He knows them. And Prabhupada actually said, seeing them, He turns to the material energy and actually tells her. So, as probably said in one lecture, now He wants to be a dog. So let Him become a dog. And then she just gives Him a dog puppy. So, just turn the telescope back.
Yeah. So that's the whole point is the crux of the whole thing. The working is the ego. We identify as servant of Krishna instead of the enjoyer and the controller, then the process works. It takes you out of material existence. Because material existence means I am the controller and enjoyer. Even the yogi, even the impersonalist, the Brahmavadi, still that the whole, what is their motive? Why do they want to get out of the material world? Right? To be happy. So they still want to, and how are they doing? They're controlling the material energy by their gyan, by their mystic yoga system to get what they want. Right? Material happiness is defined by removal of pain. Right? You may say, well, no. Okay, I'm hungry. And when I taste the food, it tastes so nice. But actually, why does it taste nice? Because it's removing your hunger. Right? When you become full, try tasting the most nicest, refined, delicate preparation. Does it have much flavor? No. If you're aware of the taste process, you'll notice it's only the first few mouthfuls that really have any meaning. Right? After that, it's fill. Like that. If you really look at it. You know? So, that's... So you've removed the pain of hunger. Yes.
Let me make a culinary comment on that.
Okay.
That's why Prabhupada, in the very early days of ISKCON, he recommended that a lot of rice be prepared. This is, anyway, the Bengali tradition. And he described rice as filler. In other words, you have some nice, tasty things around the side, this and that. But as you were just describing, that's going to satisfy that desire very quickly. And then the only thing that's left is just filling up the stomach, and that you do with rice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, rice can also taste very good when it's made nicely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it can be nice filler.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, because think about it. When you're full... After the meal, do you go, wow, it's so nice, I'm so full, this is really good. Right? I'm not hungry anymore. Is that thought there? No, you just move on.
right? So that's the problem. So the amount of time you can experience pleasure is very short, because it's only as long as it takes from having the pain, the full pain, or the anxiety or the need, until that need is fulfilled. That is your window of enjoyment. And as the closer it gets to it not being there, the less the enjoyment is. Does that make sense? So, therefore, in the material world, Brahmananda looks like the biggest enjoyment, because it's the hardest one to get. You could become Brahma, you could become so many things before you can get out of this material world, be liberated by these mystic systems. So here it's taking you so much long time. Then what have you done? You've removed not just this problem or that problem, but all problems, the whole material existence. Right? So how long is that going to last? It took you a while to get there, but then when you get there, then it's okay, I am Brahman, I'm not anything to do with the material energy. And how long can you sit there going, I'm Brahman, I am Brahman, yes, aham Brahmasmi, yes. How long can you do that? Try it. Sit down someplace, alone, nobody there, right? Nothing going on, nothing for the senses. Turn off the lights and just chant, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. See how long before you get bored, right? Right? Give yourself about, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes. Right? Really determined, 10 minutes, even 20 minutes. Okay? So that's the whole thing, is that's all it is. But the whole point is it's still material, because they take that concept of I am the controller and enjoyer with them. So even if they went beyond the subtle body, they left the subtle body, but they haven't left the false ego and the mahat-tattva. So even they go to the Brahman, even they merge into the body of the Lord, they still will come back again, because they themselves are in material consciousness. Does this make sense?
You said that the happiness in the material world is less suffering, or cause of,
No, the happiness in the material world means the process of removal of a suffering.
Yeah.
Let us say there's some fancy shoes you want, so it creates an anxiety in your heart that you want them. So then you go through the motions of getting together the money, getting yourself to the shop, getting yourself over to the counter that has the shoes, getting the shoe, and as you get them, then it's that, and then because you're starting to remove that pain of getting them, as you see it, you're getting them. Then when you bought them, then you go, "Jah, I got the shoes, this and that," and then you walk out of the store, and then where's the happiness? So it's already gone. You've experienced it. You've removed the pain.
Not only that, but I should have probably given the example of fish on land.
Mm. Yeah,
like
that's a good one.
Soul and matter.
Yeah.
Is that all these activities Maharaj is describing that we do in the name of trying to become happy are actually simply prolonging the basic suffering.
Suffering, yeah.
You see, they actually is not removing the basic cause of our suffering.
Yeah, because,
and in fact, because of karma, the principle of karma, we are simply piling on in the future. It's called the adushta, unseen reactions we're creating for ourselves. Prabhupada did it every minute that one acts in the present. That means not acting for Krishna, but acting for one's sense gratification. At every instant in this human life, we are simply constructing future bodies. All we're doing. And we will have to accept them. So, yeah, very nice kind of present day phraseology they use. You have to own this. You do something, you've done something wrong, and you try, you're standing there trying to make excuses for yourself. Oh, it was because of it. And the person you're talking to will just cut through that. No, you have to own this. Meaning, you did it.
You have to take responsibility.
We used to say, you dug your grave, now lie in it.
Yeah.
Or you made your bed, now lay in it. Yeah. See, you can't at the last instant just try to sidestep the whole train of karmic events that you yourself set in motion.
Mm-hmm. So, can you define the happiness of the
long-term? That is, that example is given using along the line that Maharaj has given, is that you have a tree, And if you want to satisfy the leaves of the tree, you have to pour water on the root. You can pour water on the leaves, it doesn't do anything for the leaves. So the souls are expansion of God. When they try to please themselves separately, then it doesn't work. But if God's pleased, because we're part of God, automatically we're pleased.
Yeah, so, well, that's how.
No, but see, the problem is here is you want me to define in intellectual terms something that you can experience.
But actually, this was already discussed. I don't know if you were here when just the last class we talked about Alabdo, Pasanti, and Surupo Pavabdi. Those terms.
Yeah.
Were, yeah. Alabdo Pasanti means liberation, to become free of material suffering. And Srupa Palabdhi, Prabhupada writes here, the real identity of the individual soul lies in understanding or attaining the knowledge that he is eternally a servant of Krishna. This understanding is called Srupa Palabdhi. By culturing devotional service, the devotee gradually comes to understand his actual relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, why is that important? You see any importance in that? To have a relationship with Krishna? Do you understand that there's any importance in that? Krishna is the Anandamaya Purusha. You know what that means? The sun is called Jyotirmaya because the light streams off the sun and fills the whole universe so that we can see. Anandamaya means, in the same way, Ananda or transcendental bliss is at every instant streaming from Krishna's transcendental body. And to associate with him means to enter into an ocean of that bliss in personal exchange. So that's called Srupa Palabdhi. Srup means your spiritual form. When you attain your spiritual form, then you have relationship with Krishna, and then you can bathe in the nectar of the ocean of devotion. That's why Rupa Swami says, the Mayavadis want to just merge as little particles of water, you know, little streams of water running into the ocean. But the Vaishnavas are like the big makaras, the big timango fish, right, who actually swim in the ocean and enjoy the ocean. You see? It's another example is like sugar is sweet. But what is that to you if you're just a crystal of sugar yourself? What does it mean to you? Sugar is sweet, but you don't know that. But if you have a relationship with the sugar and can taste it, then you realize the sweetness. So we have to have relationship. And that's where the happiness that you're asking about comes from. And so attaining that, this is what Prabhupada writes here, by culturing devotional service. It's a process. Bhakti yoga, and we're always discussing it, this is always dealt with in the appendix of every chapter. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of verses from each of these chapters into terms of what's called sambandha avidyaya prayojana. So the sambandha is the knowledge that connects us to Krishna. The prayojana is the result of actually having rasa with Krishna in the spiritual world as Krishna's friend, or Krishna's vatsalya, sakhiras, vatsalya, majuraras. But in this sampradaya, the engine that drives the whole thing is avideya. Avideya means the process. Unless we take up the culture of devotional service, you wouldn't even be here. Because this is actually activity we're doing. You see, shravan kirtana. This is avideya. And by that dynamic activity, hopefully, this is our hope here. You're getting some sambandha, some, you know, knowledge. Prabhupada says, clearly said, I quoted it in the study guide, if one doesn't go beyond sambandha, one remains a jnani, even if you're hearing about Krishna. If you don't go beyond sambandha, hearing about Krishna, and actually engage your senses in Krishna's service and begin to develop your own spiritual sarup, which right now is just a seed in the heart. Prabhupada in one lecture compared this process of devotional service to taking that seed, planting it within the womb of the internal energy, the language Prabhupada used. Just like after sexual intercourse, seed is planted in the womb of the female and then is nourished and developed. So when the seed of the soul is planted in the womb of the internal potency, yoga mind, then the sarup develops. And the whole process of development is by avideya. So actually, of the three, for members of our sampradaya, avideya is the most important. Because it's the, you know, just like in a car, okay, you can have a nice chassis and body and comfortable seats and, you know, very grippable steering wheel and nice four shift and, you know, modern dashboard with the, you know, what is it, luminescent instrumentation and all of that and quadraphonic stereo, all these comforts. But if you don't have an engine, then you can... There's this joke, you know, up in Scandinavia, the Swedes always tell jokes about the Norwegians, and the Norwegians always tell jokes about the Swedes. They're actually the same jokes.
He just changed the country. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's this one joke. I think we have some Swedes here. Any Norwegians here? Are you Norwegian? And you're Swedish, okay. So we'll tell this about Norwegian. Huh?
My grandpa is Norwegian.
Oh, but he's not here. You're Icelandic. Has nothing. You already said Icelanders have nothing to do with the Scandinavians anyway. So why do the Norwegians, when you buy a car in Norway, why does it come with windshield wipers on the inside? Because that's how they drive cars. In other words, the car's going nowhere, and he's just making a sound of a motor with his mouth. So this is, and spraying saliva all over the windshield. So they put it because the wipers inside. So, if we don't go beyond Sambandha, that's our status. We're not really making spiritual progress. Spiritual progress means to develop the same qualities as Krishna. Not in the same quantity, but the same qualities as Krishna. So we're talking about the Chaturvyuha, so Dhira Prashanta. That's one aspect of the Lord's four personalities that manifest in this Vyuha, Dhira Prashanta. So that's Aniruddha. Mm. That's the Paramatma in the heart. So that's the first stage, actually. Gita, self-control, prashanta, peaceful in mind, senses. It means equivalent to the yoga process. It's dharana. Dharana, well, that's concentration. The one before? Pratyahara, yeah. Pratyahara means when the senses are withdrawn from the sense objects. Yeah. There's no more magnetic attraction. You see, the eyes are not wandering around. The ears are not, you know, as soon as some mundane radio station can be heard in the distance, the ears are not dragging your mind over there. You see, senses are under control. The mind is peaceful. This is so this is the first stage. So we can't even attain that stage. Not even Dhira Prashanta, unless we do practical devotional service. All we can do is think. You can just hear this information and speculate on it, whether it makes sense to you or not, whether I like it or not, whether it fits this preconception I had of spiritual life or not. You can go on forever doing that, but you will not make any substantial progress in spiritual life. And until you go through these stages, first Dhira Prashanta and onward, you will never know what Anandamaya is. There's that statement in Vedanta Sutra, Anandamaya Bhyasat, in Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita renders that as meaning that just as the Supreme Lord Himself is full of transcendental pleasure, so His part and parcel, the spirit soul, is always after pleasure. That's our nature. We're always seeking. Actually, if we go on, we will see that that is in the next period. May I?
Yes, please.
Okay, I will do the honors. We'll just take us onward to this point. This is great. This is what I'm talking about. Shukadev Goswami assures Maharaj Parikshit that this Bhagavat Katha, because this is all Shukadev Goswami has been doing since the start, is speaking of Bhagavat Tattva, the truth of Bhagavan. So he assures that this Bhagavat Katha that he's speaking is exactly in accordance with the Vedic version. For Lord Krishna personally taught it to Brahma. Turning from the difficult process of gradual elevation by yoga practice to a different, yet most auspicious means of deliverance, Shukadev now presents direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. He begins by declaring that Sri Chaturmukha Brahmadeva, the first Vedic sage in this universe, studied the Shastra thrice. It means he is Trivedi. A Brahmana who goes through the Vedas three times is called a Trivedi. And that's when one is considered a master of Vedic knowledge, to have gone through it thrice, because everything Vedic, just like I was speaking of Sambandha Abhidhyaya Prayojana, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has analyzed the whole Vedic Shastra in three ways. So you find this, like, three modes of material nature, Om, A-U-M. You find the Bhagavatam gives so many, many different explanations of the three parts of... Just like the other day, I gave two, one from Jiva Goswami, one from the Pancharatra. So again and again and again and again, we come up against this, Lord Krishna, Srimati Radharani, the Jiva, you know. There are so many threes. So then to study the Vedas thoroughly from beginning to end three times, that means one has become a master. So that is why Chaturmukha Brahma, four-headed Brahma, is the master of Vedic knowledge in this universe. So what was his conclusion? He studied the Shastra thrice with great care and concluded that there is no greater teaching than Ratir Atman, loving attraction to Sri Krishna. Rati has a mundane term, a mundane sense, attraction between the sexes. You see, if a boy and a girl, like I was telling someone yesterday about we were talking on this, so he's a grihastha, so we were talking on that subject matter. Not putting it down, but just talking about the expectation of love, you see, love in capital letters. So, and I told a story about the young man who had been on psychotropic drugs since he was 9 years old, and he went off away from his hometown to get a job, and came back after years to his mother's funeral, and he was only to be back a few days, and in the course of those few days, because of taking these drugs, he's totally alienated. He couldn't even cry at his mother's funeral. He's just standing there watching. And everything looks insane to him. And actually, it's a fact. I mean, the world is crazy. So from this very detached, emotionally detached position, he's watching all his relatives, his old friends, and it's just foolishness. He can't relate to it, so he's totally alienated. But then he meets this girl by chance, and she's an epileptic who has, I don't know the technical term, but there is a mental type of mental disease in which one cannot help but tell lies. So she's always telling stories about, I have a cousin who, last year I went there and did this, you know, but it's all untrue. She just has this need to lie somehow. So she's crazy too. So because of both of them are crazy, they fall in love. And that's the end of the movie. She always has to wear a helmet because she has epileptic seizures and falls over and risks breaking her head on the cement. And he's, you know, always in this like state. But they have a great love affair because they have something very much in common. They're both crazy. So So I said, you know, this is actually the reality of material relationships. To get into them, you have to be crazy. And Krishna consciousness is the process of curing us of that insanity. So we cannot expect real love in this material world, because it is simply a form of insanity. So what Brahma is saying, ratir, that attraction, that word rati, as I said, is used, say, in mundane Sanskrit poetry, to mean the attraction felt between a prince and a princess when they first see each other, whatever. So many stories like Shakuntala and medieval Sanskrit literature, the great kavyas. It can be used in that way, but in this sense, the Bhagavata sense, it means loving attraction to Sri Krishna, the self of all selves. That's why the word Atman is used. It doesn't mean just to love yourself. You know, that's also insanity. But this is Atman. We could have capitalized it, meaning Krishna, the self of all selves. One seeking to attain the fruit of this teaching should adopt the direct method of hearing about Krishna. After the aim of his life is rectified, such a sincere devotee will go back home, back to Godhead, under the shelter of Krishna's divine lotus feet. The Lord is in everyone's heart, and we are already fully dependent upon him. For every beat of your heart, you are fully dependent upon the super soul. Because your heart could stop beating. Even you little guys here, your heart could stop beating just like that. Because you have no control over it. Are you sitting there thinking, telling your heart, okay, beat, beat? Imagine if you had to do that all day. What would happen at night when this came to go to sleep?
throw in breathing and blinking your eyes.
Yes, yeah, so keeping the heart beating, beating, the breath coming, the digestion of the food. What if you were responsible for that? You see, okay, all the polyhedrons have to go to here, and the whatever polysaturated fats have to go there, and vitamin A, and vitamin B12. What if we had to think about these things all day? We 24 hours a day would be fully occupied in the body, which is not the purpose of human mind. So the Lord is there taking care of all of that for us, so that we have the freedom. We have freedom, minute freedom, Srila Prabhupada, but that freedom the Lord gives is so we can serve him, because he's already doing everything for us that we can be here in this body. You see? So we owe him so much. That's why the Vedic culture is based on sacrifice. Even if one is not ready yet to surrender fully to Krishna, one must still perform sacrifice. Because Prabhupada said, if you don't, then you're a thief. Then you're a thief. You haven't even made this body that you live in. You can't even claim this as yours, because it wasn't made by you. Huh? Did anyone here go into some body factory? Yeah, I want that one with the blue eyes and the blonde hair. And 5 feet 11 inches tall, that's pretty good. And 150 pounds, I'll take that, Mom.
No. Do something with the abs there.
I'm sure none of us would have picked the the bodies that we presently have. If that's what we had to do, I'm sure if we were picking our own bodies, we'd be all looking like Gandharvas here. But unfortunately, we get the body we deserve from our karma. So that's all being done by the Lord. You see? And, of course, we have some responsibility for maintaining this body, but in human life, Prabhupada said, it is like being in the position of a higher government officer. I've seen, one time in my life I came to, when it was possible, it's really doubt it's possible now, at least for a person of my citizenship. But we came overland to India from Europe. I was with another devotee who had some preaching program. It was a long time ago, in the 1970s, when Prabhupada was still on the planet. So there was a devotee friend of mine who had a preaching program in South India. So he bought Mercedes, because Tata is here. Tatas, they build more or less Mercedes vehicles. So he bought a second-hand Mercedes car that he was going to use in his preaching in South India. And we drove it from Germany through, you know, South Eastern Europe, which at that time was also behind the Iron Curtain. That was the first time I was in Bulgaria. And then Turkey, and then Iran, all these exotic places. And then we went, we didn't go through Afghanistan, we went south through the holy city of Qom in Iran, and then went to Quetta in Pakistan, across the this huge desert. It's just desert. Even the road just becomes a water gulch at some points. It's not even a road, it's just a gulch where when they have flash floods, the water floods. You're just driving in the bed of a river, trying to, you know. So, and then finally we got to the Indian border. And I remember when we crossed, seeing, they have the border officers and they're checking your papers and this and that. And the soldiers. And then I remember seeing from a bungalow, that he must have been the chief officer. So he just came out of his bungalow. I remember he had this very stern look on his face, and he was just walking around to inspect. And he had his, what they say, I guess, attaché, person in the uniform, who is to, whatever he says, he runs out and makes sure it gets done. And so this man was walking around and seeing things, and you could just see him exerting his, I couldn't hear what he was saying, and if I could, I wouldn't have been able to understand it either. But it was northern Punjab. So he was, you know, just this and this and this. And every gesture he made, his attaché was saluting. Saluting and bowing, saluting and bowing, saluting and bowing. So Prabhupada actually compared the situation of a human being to an officer like that. He doesn't have to get so much into nitty-gritty stuff. He's just overseeing and giving orders, and then he can go back to his bungalow. And at least in that system, you know, in mundane governments, I mean, they might whisper among themselves what he might be doing in his bungalow, but that, you know, that's the way it is. He has the right to be in that bungalow. If he's in there all day, sleeping or whatever, well, they have to do all the work. Well, that's just the way it is. Of course, we shouldn't sleep this human life away. But Krishna gives us plenty of time, unlike the lower forms of life, which have to scrabble for every crumb that they eat. You see the little insects, the ants, running here and there. They're all looking for little crumbs of food. That's their life, you see. That's their life. It's such a hard existence. Just to fill the belly, just to find a mate, find some hole. Just like this morning, when I was cleaning my room, I found a couple freshly bored termite holes. So I had to take care of them, so the termites wouldn't migrate into my dwelling place. From time to time, I have to. I think it's because of the workers on top. They're working on top, digging the soil and disturbing the termites under the soil. So now the termites are disturbed and they're looking for other places to live. So they chew through the cement between the brickwork and they come out. So they're always looking, you know, for some hole to live in, and so that they can sleep peacefully, eating, sleeping, mating. The hole is also their place of defense. You see, they always say if a rat will generally run away, You know, if you suddenly come into a room where there's a rat, its instinct is just to run away. But if it can't, and it gets in a corner, and then a rat becomes one of the most vicious animals there are, you don't want to get near it, because, you know, it's cornered, it can't go anywhere, and it will attack you. So you have to be very careful. That's why it's in the villages, cats are popular. They take care of the rat problem. So anyway, that's the life of the lower species. Simply filling the belly, seeking a mate, seeking protection against danger, and sleeping. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But we can do other things than that by Krishna's grace. So, and that opportunity is given not so that we can build atom bombs to blow the hell out of each other, or, you know, send glorified ash cans into outer space for human beings inside of them. And all of these things that people are doing, spending millions of dollars on, that just end up making our, you know, our life more insane than it already is. Modern life becoming stranger and stranger by the moment. We're given this time so that we can serve Krishna. So after the aim of life is rectified, that means after we get off the track of animalism and get on the track of the human purpose, such a sincere devotee will go back to Godhead under the shelter of Krishna's divine lotus feet. The Lord is in everyone's heart, and we are already fully dependent upon Him. One can perceive this through intelligence. There's a purport from this section, very long purport, and in this study guide, actually in the Sandarbha section, we've left it to Jiva Goswami to discuss that, because it's one of Prabhupada's, I always found this one, Srila Prabhupada's most engrossing and intriguing purports. The purport to verse 35, I believe. Now, it's a very long one, very intellectually challenging. But Prabhupada is actually, if you follow the stages of what Prabhupada is presenting in the purport, you can actually come to a kind of intellectual super soul realization, which Prabhupada takes you through what's called in science a thought experiment, and brings you to the conclusion that the Lord must be in the heart. And you can actually, if you follow the steps in that purport, you can actually get insight into this. So, one can perceive this through his intelligence. You can perceive something of Krishna's presence in the heart through proper use of buddhi. It is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. Hearers of nectarian Krishna Katha purify themselves of material desires and, without loitering in the mundane creation, go back to Godhead. Shukadeva Goswami has now directly answered Prakshit Maharaj's question about his duty at the time of death. That was the question asked at the end of the previous canto. So this was a summary of verses 32 through 39. That, I believe, yes, that is actually the end of this chapter. And now we have what's called a vritti, a philosophical conclusion, which I'll turn over
to this one, Maharaj. 2.4, vritti. The philosophical conclusion of Sukadeva's answer to question 27, derived from verses 19 to 39, and their purports are presented here in two parts. 1. Regarding the emphasis in these early chapters of Canto 2 on the method of yoga, it is clear that the Supreme is obtainable through yoga, either mystic yoga or bhakti yoga. And 2. Regarding devotional service to the Lord is systematized as a yoga in its own right, namely bhakti yoga. This is the ultimate path of spiritual advancement. So on 1. One can leave the body through the focus of the mind by mechanical means and by yogic manipulation of the life airs. In this age, it is more practical to focus the mind by offenselessly chanting Krishna's names. A yogi who is a devotee can focus his mind upon the goal of attaining the spiritual world and travel beyond his body to that realm. Other yogis, after becoming free from the gross material body, can travel anywhere within the universe according to their desires, or they may obtain mystic opulences. If an accomplished yogi so likes, he may travel upward to Satyaloka, and his existence will become purified and more subtle. Those who reach the stage by worship of Hiranyagarbha or the Virat become liberated along with Lord Brahma at the time of the destruction of the universe. Those yogis who reach this stage by devotion can penetrate the universe in his coverings and enter Vaikuntha to render devotional service to Hari. While attaining Vaikuntha is not possible in this day and age through the gradual process of yoga, the same result can be achieved by devotees through bhakti yoga, and by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, through offenselessly chanting Krishna's names and regularly reading and hearing the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. Either through yoga or bhakti, only a fully purified soul can attain Vaikuntha, where the Lord enjoys himself in the midst of unlimited numbers of his pure devotees, who desire nothing but his pleasure. Such a soul never returns to the material world. Impersonalist materialists can never enter. 19-31 and their purports. So here is also is the slower path, the quicker path. We see the yogic path is very slow, because it takes a while to get through all those different stages up to Brahma Loka, and then you have to stay at Brahma Loka until you finally can leave. So what we see is that the Bhakti Yoga practice path is much stronger, much more powerful, because in one lifetime, one can go from that stage, and upon leaving the body, one can directly be transferred to the spiritual realm, as opposed to leaving the body, be transferred to Brahma Loka or some other place, and then make it to Brahma Loka, then after the lifetime of Brahma, then going to Vaikuntha. So it's much more direct. The mystic yogi, you see also, even if you can attain the Lord in one through the meditation of the Paramatma, then generally we see, in the Bhagavatam at least, the examples given are around 60,000 years. That's generally the most average. Though some have done it in 10,000. You hear, I think the Pajetas were 10,000. There's some others like that. But otherwise, then it was 60,000 is pretty standard. You know, so that's a long time. So it's
such yoga is so long.
Yeah.
100,000 years of life. So
60,000 you can spend, you know, standing on your head or something. Yeah. So then you get the top of your head over your flat or something.
No, reversal.
Oh, okay.
You go out of the
So. Yeah, so the whole idea here is then, even you can do it in the other, because of its mechanicalness, it's slower. So the Bhakti Yoga system is much more subtle, therefore much more powerful. And this subtle doesn't, it includes the gross and subtle body, but it actually is beyond, because it's on the transcendental platform. Like that. You're dealing with the internal potency. So it's much, I would say. Yeah. So then the essence of this he's giving is then that can be attained through hearing regularly the scriptures, specifically like the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, transcendental literature, in the association of devotees regularly. That's considered to be the most powerful. Chanting the Lord's names, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, these are considered the most important. Then worship of the deity and living in the Dham. These five then are considered the power of them. Even Lord Chaitanya himself says, even I cannot estimate, right? He's God, so even he can't estimate the power of these five processes, right? Because they, the embodiment of devotion is so great in them that even he becomes impressed on how these processes can give himself, right? He is everything, but these processes can give him. Right? So does that make sense? You have something that's everything, so there's nothing beyond outside of it. But these are so powerful they can give that. You know, it's like Maharaj was talking before about the metta language. It means it's, in other words, metta is that means the position you take by that perception, you can see the other object and study it from there.
Right? So here is a process that through it you can get God, who is everything. So that means, and technically, it's more powerful than God. Right? So that's why even he is impressed by the potency of these processes. So this is the, how you could say, the the Prabhupada always uses this term, like these terms meaning it's kind of like it's the ultimate conclusion or something.
Yeah, well, this is actually what you're doing. It's called, in Western theological language, hermeneutics. I already talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hermeneutics, it's very interesting that because a logician, a mundane logician, can could just analyze everything we're saying in this class according to logic as just being circular reasoning. You see, we're just going around in a circle. We say God gave these scriptures, a process in these scriptures, so you should follow it. Why? So that you realize God, who gave. So, you know, this is called by logicians circulus virtuosis, dictuosis, something like. Anyway, a vicious circle. I don't quite remember the Latin term, but hermeneutics in theology is it's very easy to understand. When you chant japa, you're also going around in a circle, right? But does it get boring? I mean, it gets boring if you're not really listening to your vows. But one who gets into japa, you're going around the same 108 beads again and again and again, just switching back and forth, you see? In a material sense, you're not really going anywhere. You know, you're just going around in a circle, but it's becoming sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. So this is hermeneutics. Noetics comes from nous in Greek, which means application of intelligence. And Hermes is actually Buddha, the Greek god. Hermes is Greek god Mercury, who is the lord of the intelligence. So hermeneutics is, in other words, real intellectualism. You actually get somewhere by thinking, by understanding the true purpose of the scriptures. Then you actually make progress intellectually.
Mm.
You get out of these silly, you know, self-enclosed logical traps, logical bubbles that we like to put ourselves into. Why? Because of what Osmarish was talking about earlier, the false ego. We don't want to surrender to Krishna. So we wrap ourselves up in some egoistic self-justification, which is just made of flimsy words, which is not, those words are not going to save you at the time of death. The Yamadutas are going to slice right through those words, whatever you're a Marxist. I'm a Marxist. I'm a Sartrean existentialist. It doesn't matter what you know, I'm a Nietzschean.
Oh, that guy.
Nietzsche said God is dead. Now God is saying you are dead. Come with us. So, these are, you know, empty words are not going to help us. So what Maharaj is doing is, we explain this more later on, what hermeneutics is, but it's a very nice presentation.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Yeah.
About 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. 2. Regarding devotional service to the Lord, it is systematized as a yoga in its own right, namely bhakti yoga. This is the ultimate path of spiritual advancement. Shastra confirms that no means of deliverance is superior to the direct path of bhakti yoga. Other paths, jnana and siddhi yoga, are stepping stones to bhakti. The conclusion of all shastra is reached by Lord Brahma himself after careful study, as elucidated by the acharyas, is that the Lord is in everyone's heart, and one should hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. And Lord Brahma ascertained to become a pure unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the topmost perfection of all religious principles. Those who drink through their ears the nectarian messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead find the polluted aim of their life diminished. They live a life of peace, happiness, and knowledge by constantly hearing about Krishna. They go to Goloka Vrindavan, 32-39, and their purports. So here's, they're quoting from Lord Brahma, is that in his study, then this is what he's come up with, and as Maharaj is pointing out before, is that he's won through the Vedas for three times, right? And that's all four Vedas. So he studied all four Vedas three times. So then,
Brahma with four,
the four heads.
Four heads containing the most advanced brain. Four of the, not just one brain, but four of the most, so of the most advanced brains of all living entities.
So it's, so this is a chakra core rather than a dual core, right? Yeah. And so then he has come to this conclusion. And even just as another interesting, just on the side, to back up this Brahma's having studied it, he came to this conclusion that hearing and chanting about Krishna is the perfection of everything. That's the highest yoga. It's the best process there is offered in the whole Vedas. If we look at it, is the personified Vedas themselves, right? Who are themselves and who therefore know themselves. Their conclusion after being themselves for a lifetime was to surrender to Krishna in his pastimes in Braja. Right? So here you have Brahma himself who studied the scriptures and the scriptures themselves then coming to the same conclusion. Yes? Any questions on this? Or yes?
I heard Srila Prabhupada was saying many of his followers are going to the heavenly planets. So is it so that they're going from the heavenly planets to Brahmaloka and then to the spiritual world?
No, from the heavenly planets, then they come back here. And depending upon, you know, how serious they were, they'll either be born in religious or pious families, or they'll be born in families of devotees. Like that. Then you go back to Bhagavad.
I'd just like to make a cautionary point here. Please do not take such statements as fatalism. You see, Vedic philosophy is not fatalistic. Greek philosophy is a Greek, old Greek theology, the Olympian theology. That is fatalism. Human life was presented, we're like pieces of, you know, chessmen on the chessboard. And they actually had personified fates in their, among their pan, you know, their devatas.
No, standard fates.
Yeah, so these fates are just moving us through our life. And actually, it doesn't matter what choice you make. You can, in our minds, we might make a choice to do this or that, but it is fate. In Sanskrit, daivi, which is going to determine what happens to us. But devotional service is not fatalistic. So one should never think that because Prabhupada made a statement like that, well, I guess I'm in that category and, you know, there's nothing I can do, I'm just going to go to the heavenly planets. You can go back, going back to Godhead. You may have, you know, your history as a devotee may be very spotty, many mistakes and, you know, slip-ups and fall-downs and this and that. But just like we know from Maharaj Katbanga, in an instant, if you just surrender to Krishna. That's why Ramanujacharya, he's the acharya of the Panchatrik process, but ultimately, he says prapati, which means complete surrender. That's the. This is his conclusion. Now, yet there's all this ritualism, and that constitutes bhakti yoga. But ultimately, you see, brahmanas. That's for brahmanas. But anybody can go back home, back to Godhead, by prapati or simply surrendering their heart to the Lord. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn the process of doing that. It's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. To carry the Lord in the heart by memory, Vishnu Smaranam. You see? That is identical to going back to Godhead. Always having the Lord in the heart. Then your body becomes a temple. And you are already in Vaikuntha. Because Prabhupada said every temple is Vaikuntha. Every bona fide Vishnu temple is Vaikuntha. So we just have to become bona fide devotees. Right, I'm going to stop here. Do you have any concluding words? No? So thank you very much for attending. A very nice class today. And we'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.